Well, from the time of Exodus into the time of the Judges, down through the time of the kingdoms of Israel and Judah, which one Gentile civilization, more than any other, served as a persistent annoyance to Jacob's descendants? Was it the Egyptians, the Assyrians, perhaps the Babylonians? Well, all of these certainly played an important role in Israel's history. But of all of Israel's foes, the most persistent annoyance across time has been a civilization we know as the Philistines. The Philistines. Since the Philistines interacted with the Israelites on so many occasions, across so many biblical passages, I thought it would be beneficial for us today to focus on this civilization in today's sermon. So the title for today's message is The Philistines, Instruments of God's Correction. The Philistines, Instruments of God's Correction. And for those of you taking notes, it's acceptable to simply abbreviate Philistines as P. I'm going to say it a lot, so don't get lost. I hope to show today how God chose the Philistines to serve as a thorn in Israel's side, serving as both a military and a moral threat to Israel in order to prod his chosen people to obey him. Now, there's still considerable disagreement among biblical scholars as to the origins of the Philistines. Many of the sources choose to ignore what the Bible plainly says and speculate as to, quote-unquote, more likely origins. They like to do that. But let's go back to Genesis 10, to the table of the nations, and see what God inspired Moses to record. Genesis 10, we'll look at verses 6 to 14. What does the Bible reveal about the origins of the Philistines? Genesis 10, verse 6. We'll recall that Noah had three sons recorded in the book of Genesis, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So verse 6, Genesis 10. The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. Mizraim begot Ludim, Anamim, Lehabim, and Naphtuhim. Pathrusim and Kazluhim, from whom came the Philistines and Kaphtorim. So we are given a location in the genetic map of the human family as to where the Philistines come from. They are descendants of Ham through Mizraim. Now, the same national genealogy is found, we won't turn there, but you can see the same passage in 1 Chronicles 1, verse 12. 1 Chronicles 1, verse 12. Let's also look back at Amos, Prophet Amos 9 and verse 7. Amos 9 and verse 7. We get another explanation of this group, Kaphtor, and where they might be from. Amos 9 and verse 7. God is speaking here, and he's talking to Israel, and he says, "Are you not like the people of Ethiopia to me, O children of Israel? Says the Lord, did I not bring up Israel from the land of Egypt? The Philistines from Kaphtor, and the Syrians from Kir?" So he's asking a question. He's saying essentially, just as the nation of Israel was not native to the land of Canaan, neither were the Philistines. God brought Israel out of generations of slavery in Egypt and set them in the land of Canaan. But God reveals here that he also brought the Philistines from a distant place called Kaphtor and settled them in Philistia for a reason. Let's remind ourselves of an important statement from the book of Acts. If we go back to Acts 17, we'll look at verses 24 to 26. This is actually one of the most remarkable passages in the Bible. It reminds us of the majesty of God's power, His planning, and His ability to carry out His will across vast stretches of time. This is the context here as Paul is speaking to the philosophers and the leaders of Athens. And he says in Acts 17:24, God who made the world and everything in it, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is He worshipped with men's hands, as though He needed anything. Since He gives to all life, breath, and all things, He has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. Now just think about that. Think about all the thousands of different ethnic groups on the planet, all the different subdivisions of the human family. And before Adam came out of the Garden of Eden, God knew who they would be and where they would be settled. Absolutely astonishing. God knew well in advance where Israel would be planted before Israel existed. And as Amos wrote, God brought the Philistines from somewhere else to live right next door to Israel. Why? And from where did the Philistines come? Let's go to Deuteronomy 2. Deuteronomy 2 in verses 22 and 23. We find something interesting here. The original inhabitants of this place where the Philistines would settle were actually a Canaanite people known as the Avim, A-V-I-M. But by the time the Israelites came to inherit Canaan, the Avim were no more. They had been displaced by settlers from across the sea. Deuteronomy 2:22. Just as He, God, had done for the descendants of Esau, who dwelt in Seir, when He destroyed the Horites from before them, they dispossessed them and dwelt in their place, even to this day. So the descendants of Esau took another country's land, because God willed it. Verse 23, and the Avim, who dwelt in villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorim, who came from Kaphtor, destroyed them and dwelt in their place. So these are migrants. These are people from somewhere else who pushed their way into the eastern Mediterranean coastline, conquered the native people, and took their land. Now the only thing we don't know is where Kaphtor was located. There are many indications, however, that Kaphtor was the large island of Crete in the Aegean Sea, just south of Greece. In 2005, an author named John Haywood, in his book, The Historical Atlas of Ancient Civilizations, wrote this on pages 40 and 41. We're only going to read one line. Philistine settlements are recognized by their distinctive pottery, which is derived from the Mycenaean pottery styles. Okay? That may not mean so much yet, but if you study Greek history, that word will jump out at you. The Mycenaeans were the rulers of ancient Greece. They ruled the mainland prior to the classical era of Greece. So before the Spartans and the Athenians that we're familiar with, there was another older people that inhabited the mainland of Greece. They were a very warlike civilization, and they were divided into numerous independent city-states. Each city had its own king. They were not unified as one nation. It was the Mycenaean Greeks who the poet Homer wrote about in the story of the Trojan War. It was the Mycenaean Greeks who he called the long-haired Achaeans who fought a 10-year war against Troy and conquered Troy and burned it. So if you're familiar with ancient legends, the story of Troy, these are the same guys who destroyed Troy. Exactly when in history the conquest of Troy occurred is debatable. There's not much agreement on that topic. Archaeologists have found the city. We know it really existed, and it's clear from archaeology it was destroyed by war, actually in several different eras. But it seems as if the Philistines were a branch of this same violent Aegean civilization. They would certainly have been able to invade and occupy the coastline of southern Canaan and to dominate the surrounding region. They had lots of warships. So if the Mycenaeans came from mainland Greece and conquered various places, we should see they also took over other lands. And one of the first places they conquered was the island of Crete. In fact, they conquered it so thoroughly that they absorbed it into their civilization, as well as many of the other islands and coastlines of the Aegean Sea. They even colonized part of Cyprus off the coast of Syria. So the next logical step in their expansion would be the eastern Mediterranean coast. Now, we have a record of their advance in Egyptian history. A huge confederation of many nations, known in ancient history as the Sea Peoples, even attempted to invade and conquer Egypt during the reign of Pharaoh Ramses III. They were eventually defeated, barely, and repelled by the Egyptians. But Ramses had to work out some sort of a deal with them for future peace. And the deal was to allow them to settle along the coastline of Canaan on the northeast border of Egypt. Now, most historians suggest that the Philistines, apparently, as we've seen, a branch of this Aegean civilization, migrated on from the conquest of Crete, tried to take over Egypt, and were settled along the coast of Canaan. Let's go to Genesis 20 and verse 1. Most historians would tell us that their arrival on the coast of Canaan was well after the time of Abraham and the original patriarchs. But again, they're not reading their Bibles well. If we go to Genesis 20 and we look at verses 1 and 2, we see something rather interesting. After Abraham had arrived in the land of Canaan, there were already people there calling themselves Philistines. Genesis 20 and verse 1, and Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and stayed in Gerar, G-E-R-A-R. Now Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Now we're probably familiar with the story. We'll see in a moment that this city called themselves Philistines. We'll get to there in a moment. Gerar was a city located within the area of what would be called Philistia. It was about 15 miles southeast of the coast where Gaza is located. Now, historians reading the story generally say, well, this is an anachronism. They can't really be Philistines in the time of Abraham because there were no Philistines yet. They didn't exist. But if we choose to believe the Bible, there were at least some Philistines living in this area as far back as Abraham's time. It's likely that a small settlement had occurred in very early times, and then larger migrations occurred later, swelling to numbers in southern Canaan into the hundreds of thousands of Philistine settlers. So how did things go between Abimelech, king of Gerar, and Abraham? Well, the word Abimelech is a title, not a proper name. So much like the phrase Pharaoh, king of Egypt, shows up generation after generation in the stories of the Bible, the term Abimelech, king of Gerar, shows up in different generations. It would be used to designate whatever man happened to be ruling the city in whatever generation the story was set. And later we'll see there's another Abimelech ruling over Gerar in the time of Isaac. So chapter 20, verse 3, we see that Abimelech is warned by God not to touch Sarah, not to touch Abraham's wife. God came to Abimelech in a dream and said to him, "Indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." But Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, "Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Did he not say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she, even she herself, said, 'He is my brother.'" So they'd both actually stretched the truth a little bit there. They were related, but they kept the truth from the king, that they were husband and wife. "In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this." So the king is saying, "I'm off the hook. I didn't know that they were married." And God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her." So I made sure nothing happened. "Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So Abimelech rose early in the morning, called all his servants, and told all these things in their hearing. And the men were very much afraid. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? How have I offended you, that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done." Then Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you have in view that you have done this thing? Why did you do this?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife." Now we'll see something interesting here. Even before there was an Israel, Jacob hadn't been born yet, the Philistines and Abraham are interacting. And God is using the Philistines to teach Abraham a lesson. Verse 12, "But indeed she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother," right? So half siblings. "And she became my wife." This is not encouraged today, by the way. It was a different time. Verse 13, "It came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place, wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" So Abraham is afraid for his own safety. Then Abimelech, notice verse 14, Abimelech took sheep, oxen, male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham. And he restored Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, "See, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." So this is an offer. Stay with us. Let's be friends. Bygones be bygones. Have a big chunk of wealth to add to your posterity. Then to Sarah he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver." So this is working out to be a pretty good deal for Abraham. "Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before everybody." Thus she was rebuked, right? Because she had lied here. She had not given the whole truth. So Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his female servants, and they bore children. For the Lord had closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Pichol, the commander of his army, this apparently is another title, like a major general, the commander of his army spoke to Abraham, saying, "God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my posterity? Right? Are you going to treat us well in future generations, Abraham? But that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me and to the land in which you have dwelt. And Abraham said, I will swear. Let's jump down to verse 32. In case you were wondering, how do we know these were Philistines? Verse 32. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. So there was a community here of Philistines in the time of Abraham, far earlier than most historians would agree was possible. Let's go to Genesis 26. Genesis 26. We see a very familiar story. A few of the names have been changed. Genesis 26. This is a generation later. There was a famine in the land, verse 1. Besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. So they're being very specific here. They're saying, this isn't just we forgot and told the story another time. This is a second time this happened. And Isaac went. So now here's Isaac. Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Same city, different generation. King has the same title, but it's most likely a different man now. Or he's very forgetful. Verse 2, then the Lord appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt. Right? It's not time for that yet. Live in the land which I shall tell you. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I give all these lands. So in other words, we're going to take a little trip. Look around. Everything you see is going to belong to your descendants, but not yet. And I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands. And in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. That's a reference to Christ. Verse 5, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So Isaac dwelt in Gerar. He goes to the city and he settles down because God told him, we're going to live here a while. Same thing happens, right? You can read through here on your own. Rebekah, his wife, is very attractive. Isaac gets worried. He's beautiful to behold. Came to pass, verse 8, after a long time that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, quite obviously, she is your wife. So how could you say she is my sister? Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. So here's Isaac afraid of the Philistines. He thinks he has to lie in order to protect them. And Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us. So Abimelech charged all the people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. Then Isaac sowed in that land, he's going to plant crops, and reaped in the same year a hundredfold. And the Lord blessed him. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father, and they had filled them with earth. Well, that doesn't sound very neighborly. So clearly the promises of let's just get along forever were starting to be violated. And Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. Now that's a puzzler. here's Isaac traveling with his wife and some servants. We don't know how many. Abraham had hundreds of servants. Apparently they had descendants. So this may have been a group that Isaac controlled that were several hundred strong. And for whatever reason, the king of Gerar thinks that these Hebrews are a threat. You are mightier than we. So clearly by this time, the Philistine settlement was not very large in the land. Otherwise, he would never have said that. The larger influx of Philistines from the Aegean probably came later, after their failed attempt to invade Egypt. Let's go to Exodus 13. Move ahead through time a bit. Exodus 13, verse 17. By the time of the Exodus, we see that the Philistines clearly did have a major presence in southern Canaan. Exodus 13, verse 17. It came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines. So by this point, it's called the land of the Philistines. Now again, modern historians look at this and say it was just an anachronism. People have taken a later name and attributed right here to help people understand where they were talking about. But I don't think so. I mean, if it were on its own, it might be questionable, but there's a lot of support. The Philistines were settled here already. Do not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that way was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So we're getting a little preview here. The Philistines are not a peaceful society. They are apparently at war with their neighbors, and God wanted to keep them away from that for the time being. Half a century later, when the Israelites were taking possession of the promised land, God had given Joshua overwhelming success in conquering the Canaanite cities of the land. Let's go to Joshua 13. Joshua 13. Joshua spent many years moving against different cities. And of course, God was with them most of the time. Joshua 13 and verse 1. We'll see here that by the time Joshua was old and near death, not all the territories promised Abraham had yet been conquered by the Israelites. Joshua 13 and verse 1. Now Joshua was old, advanced in years, and the Lord said to him, you are old, advanced in years. News flash. I know. I know that. And there remains very much land yet to be possessed. Joshua's like, I got I can't do it anymore. God says, this is the land that yet remains. All the territory of the Philistines. They'd left that for last. And all that of the Geshurites, from Zihor, which is east of Egypt, as far as the border of Ekron, northward, which is counted as a Canaanite. The five lords of the Philistines, the Gazites, the Ashdodites, the Ashkelites, or Ashkelonites, the Gittites, and the Ekronites, and also the Avites. They're there too. Now, we'll actually see the Philistines by this point had established themselves five independent city-states, each with its own lord. This is very similar to the way the Mycenaeans set up Greece. Independent city-states, each with its own king. So why leave the Philistines? They were clearly a danger to Israel. Why leave them to the bitter end? Why did God not inspire Joshua to conquer them sooner? Well, we find that answer in Judges 3, verses 1 to 7. Judges 3, verses 1 to 7. God reveals his mind to his people. Judges 3, verse 1. Now these are the nations which the Lord left. It wasn't Joshua who forgot. The Lord did it. That he, God, might test Israel by them. That is, all who had not known any of the wars in Canaan. This was only so that the generations of the children of Israel might be taught to know war, at least those who had not formerly known it. Namely, the five lords of the Philistines. So they were left. All the Canaanites, who hadn't been conquered yet, the Zidonians and the Hivites, who dwelt in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Hermon to the entrance of Hamath. So that northern area especially, there were Canaanites that had not been conquered, including the people that we would call the people of Tyre and Zidon. And they were left, verse 4, that he might test Israel by them, to know whether they would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he had commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. Thus the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And they took their daughters to be their wives, and gave their daughters to their sons, and they served their gods. Now that's a problem. So the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God, and served the Baals and Asherahs. And as we'll see, God placed the Philistines in Canaan and established them as a powerful confederation of five city-states for a specific purpose. Why bring them all the way from Greece and settle them here? To serve as a civilization to threaten Israel when they strayed from God. When Israel obeyed God, the Philistines were always pacified. But when Israel turned from God, the Philistines grew bold and attacked Israel. And this pattern unfolded generation after generation after generation. Let's go to Judges 1:18. Judges 1, verses 18 and 19. If you just read through the book of Judges, you see, besides the Philistines, there were, of course, other nations that God used for this purpose. But over and over again, the Philistines keep showing up. They were a persistent nuisance. And with good reason. They had a superior material culture and superior military technology to the Israelites. The Israelites were able to live up in the hill country, but the Philistines dominated the flat plain along the coast of the Mediterranean. Judges 1:18. Israel made advances into the land of the Philistines, but only so far. Verse 18, also Judah took Gaza with its territory, Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. So the Lord was with Judah. And they drove out the mountaineers, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the lowland, because they had chariots of iron, state-of-the-art tanks, right? Military equipment that the Israelites could not even hope to build. We also see various occurrences. We won't go through all the different judges who encountered the Philistines. But let's go to Judges 10. Judges 10. We'll start in verse 6. Look at verses 6 and 7. Here's just a typical example. Israel would sin. They would be oppressed. They would cry out for help. God would send a judge to deliver them. And then before you know it, they would go right back to disobedience. Judges 10 and verse 6. Then the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths, the gods of Syria, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the people of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines. and they forsook the Lord and did not serve him. So the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the people of Ammon. Now notice that the Philistines represent not just a military threat to Israel, but also a moral threat. Their advanced culture, their complex religious system, caused many Israelites to covet such a society, such a lifestyle. We see the same pattern again in Judges 13. If we move ahead a bit to Judges 13. Judges 13 and verse 1. Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. 4 decades, that's a long time, to be sold into the power of another nation. Judges 14 and verse 1. This is probably the most famous encounter between the Israelites and the Philistines, at least before the time of the monarchy. And this is the story of Samson. Don't worry, we're not reading the whole story. It's one of the most significant stories in the book of Judges, however. It takes several chapters. But let's see what we can learn about the Philistines from this story. Judges 14 and verse 1. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. So here he's going in and he's checking out the hot girls that the Philistines have over there. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, go get her for me as a wife. This is the one. Here's the address. Then his father, that's not a really good first date, but, you know. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren, among all my people, that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, yeah, get her for me. She pleases me well. But notice verse 4. Remember, Samson is a judge. He has a certain task to perform for God. But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. See, they didn't just live next door to Israel. The Israelites were their servants. They had to pay them tribute and acknowledge them as their masters. How far had they fallen? We see this confirmed in Judges 15. If we move ahead one more chapter, Judges 15. Verse 9. Now the Philistines went up and camped in Judah. So they're on Israelite, the territory of the kingdom of, but the territory of the Israelites, and deployed themselves against Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? So they answered, we have come to arrest Samson, to do to him as he has done to us. Samson had been arranging various encounters with the Philistines, leaving lots of them dead. Verse 11, then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines rule over us? We're their servants. What is this you have done to it? You're going to make things worse. And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them. Brethren, when God's people turn their backs on him, they allow sin to rule over them, don't they? In this case, literally. In this time, the sinfulness of the world was manifested for Israel in the civilization of the Philistines, as it had been with Egypt earlier. And the Israelites were bond servants to the Philistines. Let's go to Judges 16. We're going to look at the end of the story involving Samson. Judges 16, starting in verse 21. Then the Philistines took him. He'd been turned over. They took him and put out his eyes. Now, he had great strength, but his hair had been cut. He'd been betrayed. And he was now reduced to the mere mortal powers of an ordinary person. He was no superhero at this point. The Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza. They bound him with bronze fetters, and he became a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaven. Now the lords of the Philistines gathered together to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, "Our God has delivered into our hands Samson, our enemy." So the judge of Israel is our prisoner, and we've humiliated him and we've blinded him, and he can do us no more harm, right? Well, who are in this gathering place? The lords of the Philistines. We already know who they are. They are the kings of the five city-states. Okay? So these are the who's who of the Philistine nation. Verse 24, when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, "Our God has delivered us, or delivered into our hands our enemy, the destroyer of our land, and the one who multiplied our dead." So it happened when their hearts were merry that they said, "Call for Samson that he may perform for us." So they called for Samson from the prison, and he performed for them. And they stationed him before the between the pillars. Then Samson said to the lad who held him by the hand, "Let me feel the pillars which support the temple, so that I can lean on them." Just as a side note, within the last few years, there was actually an archaeological dig in this area, near Gath, actually, and they found the remains of a Philistine temple. And indeed, the whole structure was pivoted on two pillars that supported the roof. So there's actually an archaeological bit of evidence that ties directly back to this account. Judges 16, verse 27. Now the temple was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there. About 3,000 men and women on the roof watching while Samson performed. Then Samson called to the Lord, saying, "O Lord God, remember me. I pray, strengthen me, I pray, just this once. O God, that I may be with one, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes." And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one in his right and the other on his left. Then Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he pushed with all his might, and the temple fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead that he killed at his death were more than he had killed in his life. Remember, he'd been raised up to bring to the Philistines the punishment of God. The entire ruling families of the five Philistine city-states perished in a few seconds on this day. Again, God delivered Israel, but it won't last, will it? Let's go to the time of Samuel. 1 Samuel 4, verse 1. From the time of Samuel on, there are several encounters between Israel and the Philistines. And the Israelites were terrified of the Philistines. We get that impression over and over. 1 Samuel 4, verse 1. And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to battle against the Philistines and encamped besides Ebenezer, and the Philistines encamped at Aphek. Then the Philistines put themselves in battle array against Israel. And when they joined battle, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men in the army in the field. And when the people had come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from Shiloh to us, that when it comes among us, it may save us from the hand of our enemies." So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, who dwells between the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. And when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted so loudly that the earth shook. Now when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What does the sound of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" Then they understood that the Ark of the Lord had come into the camp. So the Philistines were afraid. So the shoe was on the other foot now. For they said, "God has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for such a thing has never happened before." Woe to us! Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Now, how would they know that if they hadn't been there at the time of the Exodus? They knew the story. 1 Samuel 4:9. "Be strong and conduct yourselves like men, you Philistines, that you do not become servants of the Hebrews as they have been to you. Conduct yourselves like men and fight." So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent. There was a great slaughter, and there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. Now put that in perspective. 30,000 foot soldiers in one day. The Korean War, American in combat deaths, about 35,000. That took 3 years. Vietnam War, 8 years of combat, 58,000. 8 years. This is one day. 30,000 Israelites killed. And also the Ark of God was captured. Let's go to 1 Samuel 5. Verse 1. The Philistines took it as a prize. They brought it home. "Then the Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. When the Philistines took the Ark of God, they brought it into the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon." This is their god. "And when the people of Ashdod arose early in the morning, there was Dagon fallen on its face to the earth before the Ark of the Lord." Talk about bowing to the ground. This pagan god was bowing to the Ark of the God of Israel. So they assumed must have been a tremor. "They took Dagon and set it in its place again. And when they arose early the next morning, there was Dagon fallen on its face to the ground before the Ark of the Lord. The head of Dagon and both the palms of its hands were broken off on the threshold. Only Dagon's torso was left. Therefore," see, they've sensed a pattern. "Therefore, neither the priests of Dagon nor any who come into Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon and Ashdod to this day," when this was written. "But the hand of the Lord was heavy on the people of Ashdod, and he ravaged them and struck them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territory." You can read through the story about how eventually the Philistines decided to give up and return the ark to Israel. And they couldn't get rid of it fast enough at that point. And they brought it back into the land of Israel. Let's go to 1 Samuel 7. 1 Samuel 7, we'll look at verses 2 through 4. 1 Samuel 7, verse 2. So it was that the ark remained in Kirjath-Jearim a long time. It was there 20 years. And all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, If you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths from among you, and prepare your hearts for the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines. So the children of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtoreths, and served the Lord only. Now, of course, we know that didn't last. Saul and David also had numerous encounters with the Philistines. But we see another interesting cultural tidbit here. If we look at 1 Samuel 13, verses 19 to 22, we learn something interesting about just how Israel was dominated by the Philistines. 1 Samuel 13 and verse 19. Now there was no blacksmith to be found throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, Lest the Hebrews make swords or spears. But all the Israelites would go down to the Philistines to sharpen each man's plowshare, his mattock, his axe, and his sickle. They had to go to the Philistines to have their garden tools sharpened. They weren't allowed to do it themselves, and they weren't allowed to have weapons. Verse 21, And the charge for a sharpening was a pim for the plowshares, the mattocks and the forks and the axes, and to set the points of the goads. So it came about on the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people who were with Saul and Jonathan. But there were found with Saul and Jonathan his son. So the ruling family had a couple of swords. Everybody else had a good attitude. Now we know King Saul eventually committed suicide rather than being captured by the Philistines. And his son Jonathan died in battle against the Philistine army. When David was king, while he obeyed God, the Philistines were pacified. In the time of Solomon, the Philistines were pacified. And it says that Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms and received tribute from them. So during Solomon's life, and probably during the last part of David's, he received tribute, most likely, from the cities of the Philistines. What is the fate of the Philistines, however? We don't generally think about them today. What is their fate? If we go to Jeremiah 47, Jeremiah 47. We have some warnings that begin to pop up. Jeremiah 47, verse 1. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet against the Philistines, before Pharaoh attacked Gaza. Thus says the Lord, Behold, waters rise out of the north, and it shall be an overflowing flood. They shall overflow the land and all that is in it, the city and all those who dwell within. Then the men shall cry, and all the inhabitants of the land shall wail. If we go down to verse 4, Because of the day that comes to plunder all the Philistines, to cut off from Tyre and Zidon every helper who remains, for the Lord shall plunder the Philistines, the remnant of the country of Kaphtor. So apparently God had decided the time of their punishment would arrive. We know the Assyrians came into the land, the Babylonians came into the land. Apparently they suffered severely under those conquerors. If we go to Ezekiel 25, verses 15 to 17, Ezekiel 25, verse 15. Thus says the Lord God, Because the Philistines dealt vengefully and took vengeance with a spiteful heart to destroy because of the old hatred, Therefore, thus says the Lord God, I will stretch out my hand against the Philistines, and I will cut off the Cherethites and destroy the remnant of the seacoast. So again, there's a promise here of another judgment coming against the Philistines. If we turn, however, to Isaiah chapter 11, we see something rather remarkable. This is a prophecy of the last days after the return of Christ. You would think that in the last days, the Philistines would have been long gone from the scene. But there's an interesting possibility here. Isaiah 11, verse 10. And in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, who shall stand as a banner to the people. We heard about banners in the sermonette. For the Gentiles shall seek him. Gentiles are now going to realize they have to follow God. And his resting place shall be glorious. It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people who are left. Verse 12, he will set up a banner for the nations and will assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Also the envy of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not harass Ephraim. But they shall fly down upon the shoulder of the Philistines toward the west. Together they shall plunder the people of the east. They shall lay their hand on Edom and Moab, and the people of Ammon shall obey them. Now, this is an intriguing passage. It indicates that there might still be a remnant of the Philistines living west of Jerusalem at the end time. Of course, Philistia still exists, but it goes by a more modern name. We call it Palestine. Is it possible that among the modern Palestinian Arabs there are still descendants of those ancient Philistines? Israel does seem to have had considerable trouble with the Palestinians in recent decades. Indeed, half a century of trouble. Well, brethren, we know that God is the master of time and of history. Nothing happens that surprises him. He knows the end from the beginning. And as we've seen today, down through century after century, he appointed the Philistines to live where they did for a purpose. They were to test Israel, to see if Israel would serve God or not. Is there a lesson in this story for us today? I certainly think so. We are not, of course, a part of the ancient kingdom of Israel, but we are God's people in the modern world. The power and the enticements of this world system are all around us, just across the street, just across the next block. It leans right up against us, doesn't it, in everyday life? And it's easy to live in fear of its evils, but also to be enticed by its lures. Jesus prayed that the Father would not take his disciples out of the world, but would be with them while they were living in the world. The Philistines were appointed to test ancient Israel. The entire world today tests our spiritual resolve on a daily basis. We need to faithfully trust that God will protect us, but we also need to set our hearts to obey his commandments, that God may know for us every day, beyond any doubt, that we will truly serve him and obey his laws.